This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to Grid Talk. My name is George Howson, and today we are here to preview the 2024 British Grand Prix. Joining me today, we have the mastermind behind Formula Talk, Sophia Richmond.
Hi.
And F1 historian Alex Booth.
Hello.
But before we get into this episode, we must first thank our sponsors for the episode, Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, football, right to all the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every start, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head over to one of our online casinos and get in on the game with blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slot games. Head over to the website today and get on the action. Use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% free bet credit on your first deposit up to $250. Bet Online, the game starts here. So we're going to start with none other than the British Grand Prix. It's back in the UK. It's back at Silverstone. I'm so hyped. It's one of my favourite circuits. I'm sure there's a bit of British bias in there, of course, as well. But at the end of the day, this is a track, Sophia, where there is so many memories. It hosted the first ever Grand Prix back in 1950, and we've been back here for the majority of the season since then. What are your favourite memories of Silverstone, Formula One at Silverstone over the years?
Oh, I mean, there's a lot kind of to choose from. I mean, we had Lewis Hamilton's first win from fourth in wet conditions to then winning the race with over 68 seconds, which I believe is also one of the largest gaps as well for a race win. 2020 with him only finishing with three working tires across the line. You got the Verstappen and Hamilton incident in 2021, Sainz's first win, and the save of the Halo for Zhou in 2022. I mean, you can throw in 1998, which is the year I was born, which was Schumacher's win from the pit lane, to make y'all feel old. But every year has pulled out such an amazing race for the fans. There's always so much going on, not just even with F1. You also have the support series that take place as well, and they've proven to have really good racing as well for that. And again, British bias as well. It is such an iconic track, and it proves to be one of the best race weekends of the entire season, and it's been like that for years on end.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very high speed track at the end of the day, and there's so much history there, like you said as well. You know, it's for me, it's one of the cornerstone events in F1. A Formula One calendar without Silverstone in is just it's not a complete Formula One calendar, in my opinion. That is that high of a race at the end of the day. But yeah, Schumacher winning from the pit lane, that was another crazy classic one, and I'm sure Alex, you'll be able to give us a few as well down from memory lane too, because there's been so many controversial clashes and incidents at Silverstone over the years. It just produces drama.
Well, it's funny you mentioned 1998, because that was actually my first British Grand Prix. I went for the qualifying. I was there. So that was where the love affair with Formula One really started for me. The race was wet, but the qualifying was dry. And we're at the Abbey Chicane, as it was in those days. And Ralf Schumacher spun in front of us. And that was the race that actually saved his career, to be fair, because Eddie Jordan has since revealed, I mean, Eddie Jordan says a lot of things, but I can believe this. Ralph was on the verge of being dropped at that time because he'd had a pretty poor start to the season. And Jordan hadn't scored any points. But he came all the way from the back of the grid to finish sixth to score their first points. And he had a really good drive, actually. He was overtaking cars left, right and centre. So it was really that race that saved Ralph's career. His brother Michael obviously had a much more interesting time, winning after coming to serve a stop go penalty, which is down to the ineptitude of the stewards, really, because they gave it so late in the race that they're entitled to take it on the very last lap. Silverstone has been the permanent home of the British Grand Prix since 1987. I mean, you can immediately start there for a classic British Grand Prix with Nigel Mansell fighting back to overtake Nelson Piquet with only two laps left to go, I think, or something like that. And as you mentioned, it's been the source of controversy at a lot of the time, notably 1994 with Schumacher overtaking Hill on the parade lap, rather controversially getting a penalty for it and getting it so much later on than the regulations actually allowed. So was it really worth a penalty? I'm in the opinion of no. And in recent times, we've mentioned the Hamilton and Verstappen incident in 21. My favourite British Grand Prix, from a personal point of view, was 2003, which again had controversy in it because it had the deranged Irish priest running down the hangar straight early on. But that just completely threw the race completely upside down because you had several cars diving into the pit. The Toyotas already made their pit stop just before that came out, so they ended up in the lead. And you had cars fighting back to make a recovery, and Rubens Barrichello put in probably the best drive of his career to win that race. So Silverstone's given us some very good memories. More recent ones, I'd say, I think the 2022 race is probably the best that we've had in recent times with Sainz's first win. And I'm looking forward to it. I think we're going to be in for an action-packed weekend.
Me too, mate. Me too. It's one of them tracks that's very high speed, and the 2022 race was an absolute classic. I think that showed up the absolute best of what these cars can produce in this current formula. So we'll see. We'll see how we get on. I mean, you mentioned ineptitude of stewards quite a few times there in historically, but that is still arguably a pop problem these days. And I want to get your guys' opinions on this before I kind of weigh in around, because I've got some quite strong ones, as those who have seen my takes on the F1 Chronicles video channels since the weekend's race. But one of my main questions really, Sophia, is Max feeling the pressure of Lando Norris now? Because normally, or at least in the last couple of years, he hasn't really had to make aggressive moves like that while defending the lead of a race, because he's not had to defend the lead of a race. He's been that far ahead. But whatever you think about who's to blame or whatever, and we'll get into that, obviously, but whatever you think about whoever's to blame, the fact is that there was a collision and that cost him the win of the race. So in Austria. So my question is Max feeling the pressure now?
I think to a level, yes, because as you mentioned, like, he's not had anybody close to him in the last couple of years. I mean, I would say probably only 2021 was the last time they actually was kind of close for it. But it's interesting as well, because it's not your own teammate as well. It is a competitor in the same breath. That also adds a lot of pressure, because you want the best car, you want to drive the best car, and now having a competitor who has said, well, Max has said, like, McLaren are faster than Red Bull in some instances as well. So, like, that's a lot of pressure, because you want to be the best driver for your team and also get the points. But obviously, you want to be ahead of your other competitor as well, who's technically a lot better than you. It was bound to happen. Like, Max should not have had like a such dominant seasons over the last couple of seasons. There should have been at least one person kind of involved, but that also goes to the brilliance of the car's design and engineering. So now that we have a competitive, practically almost four teams kind of in the top half of the grid, pretty much challenging for race wins, it's proving to be a lot interesting. And I don't know, maybe again, he might not be used to it. So in the last couple of years, he's just kind of making some rookie mistakes, which you don't really kind of see. And when it comes to the incident, I mean, if y'all can't tell, y'all know my support will be always for McLaren. So I do think Max is in the wrong for that. But the pressure is definitely winding up. And even also like Red Bull as well, with Newey leaving, the next season's going to prove how much of an impact he had on that car. Well, he did have the impact of the car and the design, but with how close McLaren's catching up, Ferrari, maybe Mercedes kind of as well. Like, it's going to prove it definitely for next season how much of an impact it is going to be. And honestly, I cannot wait.
Well, at the end of the day, all good things must come to an end, and I think even Red Bull fans will admit that it's not looking as certain as what it was, you know, even after the first few races of this season, really. But yeah, I mean, what's your take on it, Alex? Because for me, again, it does come down to, you know, Max potentially feeling the pressure, like he might have been hoping that Norris was going to back out of that move, but in reality, he never was going to do because it was for the lead of a race.
I don't think he's feeling pressure as such because he's got such a healthy lead in the championship and he's got so much self-confidence that it doesn't seem like that he's going to really be affected by that. In regards to the incident, I think it's clear that it was Verstappen's fault because if you look at it, he veers left into a right-hand corner where Norris is on the side of him. But I also think there's more to it than this. I mean, I put out yesterday, I wasn't particularly impressed with Lando Norris's reaction. I thought he was a bit of a big baby over it, if I'm being brutally honest. He could have handled it with a bit more decorum. I think it was just for the cameras, really. And I also think we need to look at a bigger picture of this. I mean, Lando Norris, it frustrates me in the sense that he's won one Grand Prix just recently, and he talks like he's a multiple world champion, and this has really grated on me for the course of his career. He should have won the last three races. He should have won the sprint race as well on Sunday. I want to ask the question, has he actually got it to take the fight to Verstappen without and successfully do it? You know, had he won those three races, he would have been at least 28 points, no, over 20 points closer in the championship at least. Instead, Verstappen came away 10 points even further ahead. So now it's 83 points. That's a massive lead. I know we've still got halfway through the season, but that's a huge amount of breathing space. So I think, yes, Verstappen was to blame for the incident, but, you know, in regards to him feeling the pressure, I don't think so. I think he's just going to carry on. And at the end of the day, he's got a ruthless will to win, which is what, you know, the likes of Schumacher and Senna had. And, you know, it's not perfectly clean, but it's what wins you championships.
Well, that's the thing. That's the key for Verstappen. It worked. You know, he went away from the Austrian Grand Prix with 10 points. Lando went with zero. And that is what irks me. That's a very good point as well you make about Lando Norris. Has he got enough to win a championship? I think going off of that evidence, probably not right now. Yeah, so more in terms of what the penalty was, I know you said that it was, you know, Verstappen's fault and everything, but is 10 seconds a just penalty for that sphere? I mean, we question the stewards a lot with this. And there is a school of thought that would say, you know, this was just a little crash. That, yes, it ended up taking out a driver and Verstappen was damaged because of it, but it was still a crash. So is 10 seconds enough? Some people might say, yeah, because that's just what the crash is. But if you look at the impact on Max's race, I don't even think it changed his finishing position. So to me, it's a very difficult one to say that it was a right penalty when you especially look at the fact that Lando Norris didn't even finish the race.
I kind of agree it's the right penalty, though, but I think it's the wrong penalty for Max Verstappen in particular, if that makes sense. Because had it been other drivers getting a 10-second penalty, that probably would have impacted him, those drivers, a lot bigger. Whereas Max has been known to put the foot down, close the gap very quickly. He's won from, I believe, every top 10 grid positions of the, on the track. Wow, even I'm losing my thought. So he's known to make up positions. He knows how to put his car the right way to close the gap in timing. So had it been maybe Carlos, I got a 10-second penalty for maybe a similar incident, I think that would have had a bigger impact. But because it is Max, while it is kind of a fair penalty, it's unfair because he's actually really quick in the car. It's kind of the catch 22 double-edged sword because it seems to be in line with other penalties that have happened. I mean, I've seen online that they're saying that Max should get a grid penalty as well, potentially, because it didn't really impact him that much. And obviously it was towards like the end of the race. So obviously couldn't really give that many infringements at that time. But even so, like a 10-second is normally quite harsh on a driver. And we've seen it with other drivers in previous races where 10 seconds does have a big impact where they'll drop out of the points. But because of how the way the Max drives, it wasn't as much damaging for him. But I believe it was a fair penalty for 10 seconds for that incident.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, while you were speaking there, I just literally thought of a very similar incident between Rosberg and Hamilton in 2016. And I believe that was a 10-second penalty for Rosberg. So maybe that was the reference that they used. But also, interestingly, it didn't affect Rosberg's position either. So it's weird how history repeats itself like that. But guys, let us know your thoughts on this. I'm sure everybody's got thoughts on what that, you know, that incident and everything around it. Please do let us know. You know, tweet us, post to us, at us, everywhere you can find the at symbol, at Grid Talk UK. And also, if you're enjoying this podcast so far, you can leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts to show your support. And if you're one of the 72% of people who aren't yet subscribed to the YouTube channel, please do go over there and subscribe to our channel. We usually go out live after the race, about an hour or so after the actual event. This is a preview show. This is different. But yeah, we'll be coming out live about an hour or so after the British Grand Prix concludes on Sunday. But more on that later. But yeah, so fair few opinions there. One thing to focus on about, aside from Red Bull and McLaren, the main two talking points, is the team that actually managed to win the race last time, Alex. Mercedes. A bit of a simple question, but I'm sure it's got a very convoluted answer. Are Mercedes back? Because they're... form has really taken an upturn in these last few races since they had that upgrade package in Canada.
No. At the end of the day, it was a gift. They would have finished a distant third at best. And when you say Mercedes are back, I mean, they're used to winning races and championships on a really high scale. So no, by their standards, they're not back. They've made a good recovery from where they were at the start of the season. But I don't think they're going to be really getting much more wins. I think the only wins they're going to get this year will be lucky ones, if I'm being really honest.
That's fair enough. I was more meaning in terms of being closer, because they started this season around not that far ahead of Aston Martin. I think they got a shot of beating Ferrari personally.
Yeah, you're right in that respect. Yeah, they are a lot closer, and they have caught a lot of ground up. But I still think that, I mean, they could have won in Canada. In all fairness, but I don't expect them to be contenders at every race. They might be in one or two, but I might be wrong. But that's my interpretation.
Well, you never know. We've got Silverstone coming up, and certain Mr. Hamilton is rather good around there over the years. Always seems to find his way onto the podium every year, even when his car is not the best. So we'll see. But we'll also give our predictions on that pretty soon too. So yeah, Mercedes absolutely on an upwards trajectory at the moment, but falling off a metaphorical cliff are Aston Martin, Sophia. What has happened to them? Because even in the hands of the great Fernando Alonso, the double world champion, the absolute legend himself, that car looks absolutely useless. And it's literally happened in the last couple of races. They are down there with the Williams almost at the moment. It's extremely concerning.
I mean, I wouldn't even say in the last couple of races, since halfway through the season last year, they've been on the downward. And I said it from the start of the season when everyone was hyping Aston Martin. I was like, it's going to drop at the mid and they're not going to come back again. And this is exactly what's happening still on. It's very interesting to see, but like, they have not been good for now probably about a year, if we really think about time frames. So I'm not expecting things. Like, they've proven maybe okay, they're kind of decent sometimes in qualifying, but when it comes to the actual races, not really. Like, yes, they have Fernando, and he has had some great battles, some great overtakes, but the car's just not behind him at all. And then Stroll, I'm not really going to start on that. Just, he has a seat, shouldn't have a seat. That's it. I don't agree with it. I think Felipe Drugovic should have had a seat in that last season, even mid-season almost. It's not right for the team. It's not right for what they want to do for fighting for the championships or even getting proper points at the moment, because it's carrying on Alonso's back most of the time. But yeah, I'm not expecting anything really from them now, like I have this whole season in general, because it's just consistently been out first rounds of qualifying, maybe one coming into second and then just getting lucky on other people's backs, being poor, say Perez, say Alpine. Like, they're back team now, and they were always going to be a back team, in my opinion, for this season because of how bad they were halfway through last season.
It's absolute chalk and cheese, though, in terms of what their actual aims are. I mean, they've got that new factory. This is clearly a long-term project, but, you know, despite maybe a tiny little boost at the start of this season compared to the end of last season, you know.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
It's just been down all the way for them. It's very concerning. I mean, for me, again, I just mentioned that, you know, Mercedes might be able to catch Ferrari in the Constructors Championship, but Alex, I'd say that Aston Martin are under a pretty big threat from the Racing Bulls and even Haas after they had a double point score in Austria. It's not that big of a gap up to them.
Well, yeah, I agree with everything Sophia's just said there, and I was with her in that camp when it really started this time last year. Aston Martin's fall. I mean, they were brilliant in the first quarter of the season last year, and then from Austria onwards, I think it was when McLaren introduced their upgrade. Suddenly, Aston dropped. They had a couple of good races in Vegas and Brazil, but they were pretty anonymous, really, for the rest of it. As well as the wet race in Zandvoort, and this year they didn't look that great at the start. They were probably about 8th, 9th, 10th kind of level, providing everybody finished. And yeah, they really have dropped off. And I think the rise of, as you say, Haas has not helped. I mean, that they've had a pretty solid season, to be fair to them, so far. Alpine have, as I mentioned last week, they seem to have turned a corner a little bit. They just need to stop the drivers, getting a bit too feisty with each other, and that will stop because one of them's making his way. I have to say, just going off on a tangent a bit, but Ted Kravitz caused a bit of a hilarity when he said, "What's Bruno Fleming going to do? Sack him again?" Well, possibly, because you know you could just sack him immediately if they end up crashing into each other rather than at the end of the year. But going back to Aston Martin, Fernando Alonso is just looking like a really frustrated man at the moment. You can sense it. He's saying that Aston Martin need to talk less and show more, which I don't think Fernando Alonso is really the right person to be saying something like that. But that's another point. At the moment, it's not looking too rosy for Aston Martin. They've got an upgrade coming for Hungary, but we'll see how effective that is.
Yeah, you're right. The irony of Alonso saying that he needs to knuckle down and work hard and not show off. But he's not wrong. He's not wrong. But yeah,
He's been known to like the sound of his own voice in the past. So saying saying you need to talk less isn't really something that I'd been take seriously from him.
Yeah. From Mr. GP2 engine himself, I'm not sure that's the best person to be saying that. But it's a theme of Alonso, unfortunately. He joins teams with these big ambitions, and they just seem to fall apart. I'm not sure this one's his fault, really, but it's more than a series of them at this stage.
Joining teams with big ambitions, it's not his fault. But my take on Alonso is he just expects too much too soon, I think, from teams, and that's what he's done in the past. It's like things don't happen overnight. It takes time, and you know he's not had the patience enough in the past, I think. Had he stayed at Ferrari, he might have won two more championships by now.
Yeah. I mean, had he not had the massive fallout at McLaren, he could have won the championship in 08. You never know.
I think that.
It's definitely a chance. For sure. But yeah, enough reminiscing about alternate scenarios in F1, which I do quite a bit, unfortunately. I spend a lot of time on YouTube looking that sort of stuff up. It's fascinating.
Story of my life.
Yeah, me too, mate. Me too. Oh, but yeah, races right now are coming very thick and fast. I mean, we've got a record length calendar. We're going to have a record length calendar again next year as well. Five races in 6 weeks we've got at the moment. This is the end of a triple header. And Sophia very handily reminded me that Lando Norris has been feeling under the weather recently. I mean, you wouldn't guess it would given his performances. He's been doing really well in the car. But in terms of the calendar right now, Sophia, you know, I mean, we're just sat in our offices, living rooms or whatever and covering every race. And it does feel like a lot. But for the mechanics doing this all the time, going around the world, the travel, being away from families and everything. My question to you is, what kind of effect is this having on people? And are we going a bit too far here? Because this is a lot of races in not that much time.
100%. I mean, as mentioned, like covering Formula Talk, I write articles as well. I am flat out. I'm camping out in my living room Saturday and Sunday for these next couple weeks. Like, thank God I'm away in Hungary in a couple weeks' time. Unfortunately, not for the race at the moment. I need tickets. Anybody has tickets, let me know, please. But like, it is a lot. I mean, with staff members and mechanics, they know what they're signing up for. But especially like, there's some people who probably only just started and not understanding how much of a toll it is as well. It is heavy. And like, as mentioned with Lando, like he's been ill for the last 2 weeks, and then it doesn't help that he's traveling, flying different altitudes. Obviously a lot of pressure on the body during race weekends, especially like with last weekend it being a sprint and a feature race. Like, that's a lot to deal with. And obviously, again, we have 1 week off before we go to Hungary, and then it's Spa. Like, it is a lot. And I understand the calendar needs to be kind of spaced out for logistics, traveling, and then potentially some breaks, but and also weather as well. But the fact that five races in 6 weeks, and then you have the break, which is great, it's more kind of a give and take. Like, can we remove some races, or can we spread them out a little bit even better, like, and reduce the summer break potentially back a few times where we had like almost 2 to 3 weeks break in the beginning of the year. So it was like a double header, then a 3 week break, or 4 week break, then a double header again. Like, they could maybe use that time to kind of spread out the circuit a little bit better if logistics still allow, but it is a lot. And then also, God forbid, if something happens to the car, they're not going to be able to get parts in time for potentially even the next weekend. Like, obviously the Williams was a conversation as well when they had their incident. Would they have enough time to get new replacement parts before their next race? That's another kind of big aspect as well. So God forbid, if something was to happen in Silverstone or maybe even Hungary, would they actually get parts available for the next race because of how close everything is? But it's a lot. And like, they don't have time off as well because they're doing all these media, especially these European circuits as well, where a lot of the sponsors are kind of based at, and fan interactions and everything. They can't switch off, whereas like sometimes the engineers, sometimes Sky, like other media people, they can take a bit of a break. But these drivers are on almost 24/7 when it comes to these double and triple headers, between traveling, prepping, understanding what happened in the previous race, what's going to happen to this current race. I don't know how they can do it and do it for many years on end.
It is impressive for sure. It really is that they can actually do it, but it does beg the question, you know, are they going too far with it? And a same question to you really as well, Alex. I mean, we've not only got this year five races in 6 weeks, but we've also got things closer to the back end of the calendar, things like Azerbaijan and Singapore being back-to-back weekends, Las Vegas and Qatar back-to-back weekends. It's really stretching the limits of what these people can do.
Yeah, but I don't really buy all this about, you know, with the extension of the races, because what we're forgetting is, you know, in the past, when there were fewer races, but there was testing during the weeks when the racing wasn't on. So you'd be, say like this, for example, you'd be in Austria over the weekend, and if the race wasn't there, you'd probably be going to Paul Ricard or Barcelona, Estoril, to do 3 days of testing, and then you'd be off at the next Grand Prix again. It's always been full-time. I understand now with like the budget cap and things that can have an effect on, like as Sophia mentioned, you know, if there's a crash, that can affect, you know, things like parts or and repair work. But, you know, people who like the mechanics and things and other places, they know what they're getting into. I can't believe for a minute that somebody who gets a job within a Formula One team is not aware of what goes on in Formula One. It's something that it's a dream job for them. It's something that they really want to do, and it's part of it. I don't really buy all this about the amount of races on the calendar. I just think it's simple fact. There's more races now, but there's less testing. Back in the day, there was less races, more testing. It's just the way it's just the way it's been.
Yeah, I suppose actually that's a fair point. But all I would counter to with that, and I know it wasn't the case for everybody, because you know you had people like Michael Schumacher, who was just a freak, where he'd test all the time. But a lot of these teams, particularly McLaren, would have testing teams too. People like Alex Wurz and De La Rosa would do a lot of the testing. But I'm sure Hakkinen and Coulthard and Raikkonen did a lot of testing too. So maybe it does even out.
Oh, it is a lot. I'm not denying, but I think it gets made a bigger deal out than it really needs to be.
That's an interesting point. Interesting point. Guys, again, let us know. Let us know your opinions on it. Is the F1 calendar too packed? Are there too many races? Do you not care because you just enjoy seeing so many races? It's all about your viewpoints at the end of the day, and what we want to hear. So there we go. One thing I will quickly mention as well. I mean, you kind of mentioned him a little bit earlier on, Pierre Gasly. I don't think we've really spoke about him re-signing with Alpine. I mean, I spoke not very good terms about Alpine on our last preview, and since then they've re-signed Gasly, so things are looking a little bit more settled. Sophia, I'd say that's probably a good confidence move for the team, because even though it kind of seemed like there was nowhere really that Gasly would go, just having the same guy in the car next year, that's a bit of consistency, and that's going to help him if there's a certain Australian rookie that's coming in beside him.
I mean, here's hoping. We said it in the last preview, it should be doing coming in. I think, yeah, Gasly was probably the better choice. Obviously, Ocon was already out. But like, if you look at kind of the grand scheme of it all, I believe Ocon has more points than Gasly in Korea, but different time frames, obviously, different teams. But it makes sense to have at least one of the top out of the two drivers and have somebody consistent, especially coming in to 2025 and then leading up to the 2026 change. Like, they don't want to change too much. I can't remember if Gasly's was a 1 year or a 2 year or even more. I can't remember off the top of my head how many years it was signed for. It'd be shocking if it was a 1 year.
I think they said it's more than 1 year. I don't think they've specified. But it's presumably
it just says multi-year, doesn't it? I think. Yeah.
So more than two. I'm going to stick with two then. So it'd be good. And again, it also does depend then potentially on how the regulations go and the new change. If it is performing well, then he might have a way out, or Alpine will have a way out and somebody else can come in. Victor Martins, maybe. Who knows? But I agree with it. And I'm hoping that we can get Doohan announced very soon, because there's still so many rumors going around about who's getting what seats, and I'm ready for it to kind of end between all the different teams. So I'm ready for some like normalization about who's driving for next year.
Yeah, and like Alex mentioned in the last show we did together as well, Mick Schumacher also in the fray for that seat too. And interestingly, on the same day, Lance Stroll's future, which was under much speculation, he was also confirmed to be driving for Aston Martin for 2025 and beyond, in their own words, like the Buzz Lightyear or something. But there we go. Anyway, enough driver transfers. Let's predict the British Grand Prix. I'm sure we'll get it absolutely spot on here between us. We might have to more come wise. It might have to get the wrong drivers in the right order or whatever, but we'll figure it out. So, Alex, I'll come to you first. Want your prediction for who's going to be on pole, top three, and a bold prediction as well.
For the sake of the championship, I would love to say that Norris could win in front of, and it would be a great win for him in front of his home crowd. But I just don't think he'll be able to handle the pressure of the home crowd, and with the chance of having a potentially winning car for the first time. I'm just going to stick with Verstappen again for the pole and the win, podium. Verstappen probably go Norris second. And Piastri third.
What's your bold prediction?
Bold prediction, Sergio Perez to have a much better race and finish about fourth.
That is a much better race for him, unfortunately, at the moment. He's he might be showing what the pace of that Red Bull actually is, and Max Verstappen might be massively outperforming it.
I think that is the case. I mean, everybody said, oh, it's the car, but you know, you need to still drive the car, and I don't think Sergio's not a bad driver. He's just obviously not in the same league as Max. I'd question the amount of help he's actually getting from the Red Bull team over the past couple of years. That's one thing I would say. Is he there to just drive the second car, and all the focus is on Max? So that would explain one reason why he is so far off the pace.
Yeah, and obviously before that we had the likes of Albon and Gasly in that car too, and they did pretty badly in that car, but then they did pretty well outside of that car. So is it a coincidence? That's another theory for another day. Sophia, what's your prediction for pole position, podium, and the bold?
I think my bold's going to contradict my podium. I will say that. I think, you know, I'm going to save him a bold then. I think pole and win is got to be Max. I think as much as I would love to see a double McLaren podium, which has not been the case for them recently, besides obviously the sprint race, I think Lando will be P2, but then I think Charles Leclerc P3. And then my bold is an all-British podium.
So
I said it.
Yeah, so Lando,
I'm not saying
Lewis.
Which drivers. I'm not saying which drivers in which order, but I want a whole British podium.
If that happens, put a lottery ticket on when on.
One could dream. Like Max just has a 2021.
It's possible.
I think we need a few drivers to retire potentially, but you know, stranger things have happened. This is Formula One; anything happens, and it usually does. But yeah, for me, I'll just go fully with heart. Nothing in my head. I mean, my head would say to go for Max Verstappen with how he's been, but I'll go for my boy Lando in P1. I'll go for Piastri in P2 because I think he was so close to getting a podium last year. P3, let's go for Verstappen. I can't see him doing worse than a podium. But then again, didn't get a podium in the last race, so you never know. You can't predict Formula One sometimes. Pole position, give it to Lando. And bold prediction. With how bad he's been in the races recently, I'll go for Charles Leclerc for a top five. He normally does pretty well around Silverstone. I know that qualifies as a bold prediction, but given his form recently, it's relatively bold in my opinion. But yeah, there we go. So that's all the predictions and everything. Sophia, if you want to tune into another show, our sister show, where can people find that?
Yeah, pretty much we preview and record episodes, Formula Talk. You can find this season on Formula Talk UK on YouTube. If you're listening to us on Spotify, Apple Music, Verbal, Pocket Cast, just search up Grid Talk because we are in with that in the same catalog. We're just about to review Austria and preview Silverstone tomorrow with my co-host Tom Downey. But yeah, you can find us anywhere that you listen to Grid Talk.
Thank you very much. Alex, if people want to take a trip down memory lane back to the 1994 season, where can they head?
Yeah, the next entry into the 1994 season is coming up this week because, ironically, we've been talking about the close-knit calendar, and this was a back-to-back weekend in 1994. We had France and then Silverstone just 1 week apart. So there's two coming up in quick succession.
There we go. So it's not a new thing then. It's been happening for a long time. And if you want to see and hear more from me, you can head over to the Chronicle Group's video sites for F1, football, IndyCar, NASCAR, and motoring as well. We've got all of those on there. You can head over to our Microsoft Start accounts, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. I think that is all of them. I think I've nailed them. I hope I have. I'll probably find out in about 2 minutes that I've not. But anyway, that's most of them. So yeah, if you want to hear some more stuff from me, like some controversial opinions on a certain Max Verstappen recently and his conduct, you can go over there and agree or disagree with me. But Grid Talk is available on YouTube where most of the episodes are recorded live. This is not one of them. This is a preview show, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Apple Music, Verbal and Pocket Cast. Just search for the F1 Grid Talk. For our big back catalogue of shows, all the episodes are on there, which include previews, sprint reviews, race reviews, retrospective race seasons, everything in between. And also, please subscribe to our Patreon as well if you want to contribute financially to the show to get better mics, lights, and recording equipment. And also, make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. And we'll be back at 6 p.m. on Sunday UK time. That's 1 p.m. Eastern to review the British Grand Prix. I want to thank my panelists as always for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for listening and watching the Grid Talk podcast presented by Bet Online. And goodbye.